them may not want to light up the sparklers just yet.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski, in for Steve Chiotakis. It's time to fire up the grill, eat some potato or macaroni salad, maybe both. But executives at GM may not be in the party mood. Heading into this holiday weekend, the company's waiting for a decision in its hearing on whether it'll get its independence from Chapter 11. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins has more.
The 4th of July comes at a rather inconvenient time this year for General Motors.
Yeah, this is one of those times when you almost wish that there wasn't a long break.
Paul Eisenstein follows the company for the DetroitBureau.com. General Motors wants to divide the company. It'll sell off shuttered factories and brands that aren't selling well, like Hummer and Saturn. And it'll keep the good assets, brands like Chevrolet and GMC, and factories that make cars that still sell.
And all of a sudden, you've got this new company that is much slimmed down, and basically all the bad stuff goes, well, I think technically the term is bye-bye.
U.S. Judge Robert Gerber adjourned the hearing yesterday with no word on when he'll make a decision. The government has said if GM is not cleared by next Friday, it can walk away from its pledge to back the company. A ruling could easily be held up by creditors or unions. Either way, Eisenstein says it's unlikely the Obama administration will let the company fail. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Several states failed to come up with a budget this week, and as Marketplace's Steve Henn reports, local governments are about to feel the pain.
It's been a tough year for many counties and cities. Property tax revenues crumbling while demand for social services is soaring. But Chris Haney at the National League of Cities says these problems are likely to get worse as state governments across the country grapple with their own crippling financial problems.
Well, it is trickling down. I think the depth of the recession and the impact on state budgets, which is very severe, inevitably means that local programs are likely to bear some of the burden.
Haney says education's likely to be particularly hard hit. But Bill Yule, the mayor of Alexandria, says education cuts are the tip of the iceberg.
The reductions in pension funding, reductions in funding for public safety, sheriff and court services, and mental health and health programs.
And that leaves local leaders with a couple unappealing choices. Either raise taxes or cut services dramatically. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Wall Street is closed today ahead of Independence Day, and markets didn't react too well to yesterday's June jobs report, showing unemployment's now at 9.5%. The S&P lost nearly 3%. The Dow lost 223 points, more than 2.5% to close at 8280 yesterday. The Nasdaq down 2. Right now in Europe, shares are mostly lower, and major markets in Asia had a down day. It relieves stress and is good for your health with protein and B2. That was the message behind a beer commercial that aired yesterday in North Korea, probably the first time that's happened. Normally, ads on TV aren't allowed, though Kim Jong-il, the North Korean leader, apparently enjoys beer. This is the Morning Report for Friday, July 3rd at Marketplace.org. Okay, California has some big problems, but it isn't the only state with budget trouble. There's a pretty long list this year, and the Buckeye State is also near the top. Ohio needs to take care of a $3 billion gap. Ashley Milne-Tite reports on one sticking point.
Ohio Governor Ted Strickland has always been against gambling, but the state's budget shortfall has forced him to rethink his position. His plan would introduce slot machines at Ohio's horse racetracks. He believes gambling could bring in more than $900 million in revenue during the next 2 years. James Brock is a professor of finance at Miami University in Ohio. He says the state's evaporating tax revenues are one reason to try this, and there's another one.
Over recent years, more and more of the states bordering Ohio have legalized gambling, and so the feeling seems to be that, well, people in Ohio are gambling, they're just gambling next door, why don't we let them gamble at home and keep that money here?
Brock says the issue has been put on the ballot before, but the majority of voters rejected legalizing gambling. Tight times may have caused a change of heart. A recent University of Cincinnati poll found 60% of Ohioans supported the move. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Short sellers could be feeling the heat this summer from federal regulators. The New York Times says it looks like the Securities and Exchange Commission will put rules back in place that makes shorting more challenging. Short selling is betting a stock price is going down. There's a big split in this debate. Banks that took heavy losses last fall say shorting is dangerous. But hedge funds and pension funds maintain that kind of trading weeds out shaky companies. If you're vacationing this holiday weekend, you could be saving money on accommodations. Or if you're not going anywhere, you could be making some extra money. Some new online travel services are pairing up people with extra beds and sofas with travelers looking for somewhere to crash for a small fee. Timothy Beckworth has the story.
Robert Rutherford lives near the beach in Los Angeles. For the past few months, he's been renting out his bed to total strangers for $75 a night.
So this is the view. So yeah, you can see a little bit of the water out there.
Rutherford is one of thousands offering their futons, couches, and bedrooms as crash pads on airbedandbreakfast.com. The site gets a commission of up to 13% on each booking and operates in more than 1,000 cities around the world. It's known as peer-to-peer travel. The half-dozen websites offering the service tend to get the most traffic during major events like the Super Bowl. Still, travel industry consultant Peter Yesowicz says the idea's appeal is limited mostly to 20-somethings.
And at that stage in life, there are probably not only certain financial motivations, but clearly social motivations. But I think as those travelers begin to age, I think what you're going to see is their interest in some more conventional lodging alternatives will begin to become more pronounced.
Venetia Pristovec of Hollywood rents her pull-out sofa for just $25. And though she doesn't make pancakes in the morning, she can stand in as a hip concierge.
We're so helpful telling them, like, the best restaurants to go to. Like, it's like having your own personal tour guide. And so that's why we kind of like the idea of when we go traveling, staying with people like that.
Peer-to-peer services aren't just limited to couch surfing. ParkAtMyHouse.com, for example, lets people convert their empty driveways into carports for cash. I'm Timothy Beckworth for Marketplace.
Have you Binged yet? Microsoft sure hopes so. Bing is the name of Microsoft's new search engine that launched June 3rd. We learned this week it gained some market share from that other big search engine, Google. Rob Enderle follows tech trends at the Enderle Group. He says that's a nice start, but they have a long way to go.
They don't have unlimited time. They have to be able to show that they've made significant market share gains, certainly more than 1%, probably by the end of the year.
Bing's share peaked in the first week of June. Tour de France kicks off tomorrow in Monaco. TV ratings are expected to be higher than last year thanks to the return of a certain 7-time winner of the event. The Versus Network airs the tour and is counting on the buzz. And one man assures us it is definitely there. We caught up with Versus cycling commentator Phil Liggett joining us from Monaco. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
This is your 37th tour. What's your state of mind going into this year's event?
Well, this year, everybody's excited because we never thought we'd see Lance Armstrong ride the Tour de France again. He retired after he won in 2005 for a 7th consecutive time. It's a record which I believe will never be equaled. And here he is out of retirement at 37 years of age. Perhaps there's a clue there, as it's my 37th tour. And I think he'll be a contender. I think Lance will possibly be on the podium in Paris. Maybe not the win, but certainly we'll know he's been in the race.
Now, I know certainly your concern is not with the business of cycling, but this incredible event and the sport. But I'm wondering if you are noticing more marketing around you and big names kind of trying to step into the frenzy of this all.
I think we are, very much so. The publicity caravan, which precedes the race by an hour, is as busy as ever with companies buying into the race and paying a lot of money too. $2,000 or $3,000 a day is what they pay just to put the vehicle on the race roads. And I think that whereas the world is facing a recession, people have been turning to bicycles to save money. And in London, for example, where I live, there has been an 80% increase in riding bicycles. And I'm delighted to say an 18% drop in casualties on the road as well at the same time. So I think, yes, the money in the sport is not short. It's coming in all the time.
So how are you seeing this increased interest in cycling translate to what people want to know from you heading into the tour?
Well, I don't just do it for the American Versus Network. I also commentate for Australia, for South Africa, and for the organization, which puts a special 30-minute program to the world every night as well. In all, we reach 150 nations around the world during our commentaries on the tour. And we know by the feedback, they have an enormous number of viewers. Apart from the Olympic Games or perhaps a Football World Cup, they are telling us that we are the highest-rated program in the world, taking a world audience. It's quite amazing, really.
Okay, here's to your 37th tour, then.
Thank you.
Longtime cycling commentator Phil Liggett, thanks so much.
Thank you.
As you may have heard already, a public memorial service for Michael Jackson is set for Tuesday morning in Los Angeles at the Staples Center. Until news of Tuesday's service, there was a lot of talk a memorial would happen at Jackson's former home, Neverland. The Neverland Ranch is now in the hands of L.A. firm Colony Capital. There's still a lot of talk about turning the property in Santa Barbara County into an attraction similar to Graceland, the home of Elvis. We're joined now by Robert Rasmussen. He's dean at the USC Law School. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Anita.
The company, Colony Capital, that owns the mortgage to the Neverland property, do they have the right to go ahead and make this a tourist attraction?
No. As with every landowner, you're subject to zoning restrictions. I would doubt if this were zoned for business. And then you also have to worry about the traffic. If you wanted to develop the property where you had a lot of people going there all the time, you'd have to really develop the whole infrastructure around the area to handle that influx of visitors.
And Graceland attracts about 600,000 tourists a year.
Right.
And the estimates on Neverland being an attraction is a lot more, something like 1 million, I think I read in one place.
It's anybody's guess now. It's difficult to make projections of the future today, given the intense excitement that's been generated by the passing of Michael Jackson. What the actual demand's going to be a year from now, 2 years from now, is really anyone's guess.
So how would you explain the challenges here?
The challenge for the handlers of the Jackson estate is that, you know, when you die, basically your debts are due and owing. So they owe somewhere between $400 or $500 million. They have a lot of assets. They have the Neverland Ranch, the interest in the Beatles catalog, the interest in Michael Jackson's own catalog, and the likeness of Michael Jackson. All these are valuable assets, but that's all value based on money that's coming in the future. So the challenge is, how do you take this future revenue stream and find a way to use that to satisfy the current debts?
Have you seen anything else that parallels the situation?
I think Michael Jackson is unique in so many levels. Even Graceland, I don't think, is a good parallel in the sense that at least Graceland, we always knew that was Elvis's house. That's where Elvis would retreat to. That's where Elvis lived. Michael Jackson hasn't lived in Neverland for years. Neverland, I think, has a bit more checkered persona than Graceland did.
And, of course, that's, I guess, part of the draw for some people.
It's part of the draw, and it's a very, I think, difficult decision. How are you going to maximize the value of Neverland? Remember, Michael Jackson is basically a very complex business enterprise, and we're now in a situation where that enterprise needs a restructuring. Is the family going to be able to get someone to come in and lend them new, fresh money in order to pay off their current debts?
Robert Rasmussen is dean of the USC Gould School of Law. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks, Anita. It's my pleasure.
No day off for the Marketplace team. Be sure to tune in for a great show this afternoon as well. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Have a nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.